device is more akin to a prod in order to get you to make the correct actions. You will still maintain your self-identity.
Sand, I shouted. If you put that chip in me, I'm going to commit suicide at the first opportunity. The fires in Sand's eyes grew ominously large. It had one good side effect. The robots halted, and so did the operating theater.
Are you truly that selfish, Logan?
Sand asked. You'd better believe I am. I'm not going to be anyone's slave for any reason.
Not even to save the Earth?
That's right, I said. Not even for that.
That is unbelievably selfish.
Yeah, well, I said. Tough beans.
Do you not love the human race?
Of course I do.
Would you not give your life to save your species?
Most of the time, yeah, I said.
Then why does it matter if you have the control chip in your brain? You must die after slaying Baran and his confederates. You must cease in order to protect the great secret.
Using a sleeve, I wiped sweat from my brow. I had to figure a way out of this. Did you create the CAU? I asked.
Indirectly,
Sand said. And that's why all this happened. That's why Baran and the rest of us found this place. Because you put the headquarters under the salt flats.
You have a point, and you should know that I have seen the error of my ways. I will not make such an error again. In my defense, at the time, I felt I had to counteract your clumsy actions.
What's that supposed to mean?
Why do you think the world leaders did not come to the obvious conclusions after the nuclear detonations caused by the space pirates?
The CAU helped blind the world?
CAU was only an embryo organization at that time,
Sand said.
But in a manner of speaking, you are correct. I also set up the CAU to aid in stopping future alien incursions. I have failed, however. I believe the Galactic Guard will have to tighten the cordon around the solar system.
I nodded even as I gauged my options. It sounded like this knife was the ticket to slaying Baran. I didn't want the knife, though, if I had to give up my free will to get it. What I wanted might not matter, as I couldn't see a way out of this. Look, I told Sand as sweat pooled under my armpits. If you're going to put the control chip in my head, let me consult Rax first.
For what reason?
Asked Sand. Frankly, I'd like Rax's advice about what I should do.
That seems like dubious reasoning to me. Thus, I believe you are lying again. How can we come to an understanding if you continue to give me falsehoods?
Does it always have to be your way or the highway? I complained.
As long as I have the upper hand, yes,
Sand said.
Logan, I believe I have arrived at a solution.
What's that?
I will insert a guidance chip along with a control device in your frontal lobe. The guidance chip will ensure that you remain in a positive frame of mind. In essence, it will keep your darkest thoughts from bubbling up from your subconscious. In this way, you will not think of committing suicide.
Oh, that's great, I said, clapping my hands, trying to keep the sarcasm out of my voice. The robots began dragging the operating theater closer again. I realized then that Sand must be half mad, or his thinking was so far into mine that he might as well have been insane. If I were going to remain me, I was going to have to do something right this second.
What is the meaning of your newest action?
Sand said. I had begun walking toward the operating theater. I can see there's no way out of this, I said. I don't totally like it, but I know when I'm beaten.
I do not believe that corresponds to what I have learned about you, Logan.
I kept walking resolutely toward the operating theater. It brought me near the robot holding the key to the granite block. The key was sitting on a pad of sorts. It was a big metal key, a little longer than my forearm.
Is this another trick?
Sand asked. Nope, I said as I ran at the key-holding robot.
Logan, this is senseless. If my robots fail to catch you, rest assured that my Grithys will apprehend you sooner than you can believe.
The key-holding robot clanked backward even as the others by him lurched toward me. I lifted the key from the holding pad. It was even heavier than I'd thought, but I was stronger than a normal human. With a grunt, using two hands, I turned away from the robots.
Logan, put that down.
The robots that had dragged the granite cube should have stayed by it instead of clanking toward me. They moved in a line toward me, and it seemed as if they were blocking me from the granite cube. Other robots clanked from the other direction with their bronze arms outstretched. I ran at the first line, dove, rolled behind their metal legs, and jumped up behind them.
"Stop, Logan," Sans said in a booming voice. "I will destroy you if you do not put down the key."
I ignored the metalhead as I sprinted the short distance to the cube. The sounds of fire grew from Sans' eye sockets. Could he beam jets of flame at me? I wouldn't doubt it. I thrust the heavy key in the slot. It went in smoothly. I tried to turn it and failed. A glance over my shoulder showed me two walls of advancing robots closing in toward me. Sweat dripped from me and soaked my garments. Remembering the hatch release, I twisted the key the other way. It rotated and clicked ominously.
"Logan, stop."
The vast granite cube split in half, the upper part rising with a grinding noise. A weird light radiated from the center of the cube. There in the middle was a sheathed dagger. The handle glowed, and the tiniest tip of the blade that wasn't in the sheath shimmered in a frightening fashion. My mouth was dry, and my fear tightened my groin. I dove into the cube between the two halves and slithered to the knife, clutching the handle. A shock went through my hand. I ignored the shock and took the knife with its metallic-seeming sheath. It was big, like a big Bowie knife. Once it was in my possession, I kept crawling, sliding out through the other side of the cube.
"Logan, drop the knife," Sans said.
I did no such thing. Instead, I sprinted for the black wall that had been behind me as I faced Sand.
"I will burn you to death," Sand warned.
Even if that wasn't a hollow threat, I wasn't going to stop now. Fire roared, and a seemingly liquid jet of flame like from an old World War II reel with Marines burning Japanese soldiers out of caves hissed against the floor beside me. The floor there burned with fire, making me sweat harder. By that point, I had reached the dark steel wall. Instead of drawing a knife and hacking, I noticed a hatch. I pressed a button.
"This is your last chance, Logan," Sand boomed.
The hatch slid up. I darted in and to one side even as another jet of liquid fire poured into the chamber. It burned, and the heat caused me to stagger from it. The fire lit the room, however. I saw Rax on a stand. I darted there, grabbed him, and shook the crystal. "Rax! Rax, can you hear me?" The crystal did not answer. Into the hellishly hot room clanked 3, 4, 5, a continuous line of robots.
"If you escape, I will find you," Sand boomed from outside.
I backed away from the approaching robots, turned, and saw another hatch. I ran to it, pressed the button, and the hatch opened. It looked like the steel room where I'd fallen unconscious. At this point, I didn't have a choice. I darted to it and pressed another button. The hatch slid shut behind me. I'd held my breath as I moved in a quick walk through the steel chamber. It was dimly lit, and it again seemed stale, without breathable air. Fortunately, there was another hatch. Soon enough, I found myself in another room, this one with breathable air. "Rax," I said, shaking him again.
"Yes, Logan, what is it?"
he asked. It must have only been the steel room that did whatever it took to keep a Rax crystal from functioning. "Can you pinpoint the guard ship?" I asked.
"Of course," Rax said. "Why would you think otherwise?"
"Transfer us there."
"Just a minute," Rax said. "Sand is hailing me."
"Don't answer, Rax. He just tried to put a control device inside my mind."
"That doesn't make sense. In fact, Logan, Sand is telling me you are a renegade."
"Rax, after we kill Baran, Sand told me that you, Jenna, and I also have to die. We have to die in order to keep this underworld and Sand's existence a secret."
"I can understand the logic, certainly,"
Rax said. "So you want to die?" I asked.
"You did not let me finish. But before I do, I want to know what it is that you're holding. It is very strange."
"That's because it's not of this world, this universe. If you transfer me, I'll tell you everything Sand told me."
"But Logan, Sand has told me he will destroy the guard ship if we transfer to it."
"So what does that tell you?" I asked.
"That you have made Sand angry."
"I have, but what else does it tell you?" After 3 pregnant seconds, Rax and I began to transfer.
Chapter 39.
The surprising thing upon appearing back in the piloting chamber was that Jenna was still in her room. Rax checked the security system and told me that she was sleeping. I slid into the piloting chair and began activating the ship. We powered up, lifted off the rocky ground.
Sand is calling,
Rax said. Put him on the comm screen, I said. Rax complied, and I found myself viewing the great metal head. I don't mind telling you, but it was much better seeing Sand on the screen than in person. What's up, good buddy? I asked.
We are not friends, Sand said.
Don't worry about it, I replied. That was just a saying. I have to tell you, Sand, that you've seriously pissed me off.
I also am angry, Sand said.
So that makes two of us.
Return the knife at once.
Fat chance, I said. I need it to carry out my mission.
You.
Yes, I asked. You were going to say?
Rax, Sand said. Your guard agent has acted in bad faith. I demand that you transfer him to me for immediate reprisal.
Why don't you tell Rax what you really mean, I said. You want to operate on me. Hey, Rax, why do you think all these clones have shown up with bombs in their guts and control devices in their brains? Old Sand here had them installed. In fact, Sand is behind the CAU.
I told you those things in strictest confidence, Sand said. You have lied to me. You said you would not repeat them.
That's true, I said. But that was before your robots tried to grab me. Look, Sand, we can work together. But I'm not committing suicide for you or anyone after we take care of business against Baran.
Logan, Rax said. Enemy sensors have locked onto the ship. I am detecting missiles and several laser sights targeting us.
Are you sure this is the way you want to do things? I asked Sand. If you fire on my ship, all bets are off.
If you are destroyed, I can go about this with properly faithful soldiers, Sand replied.
Hey, good luck with that. All your people have failed so far to do anything to Baran. I saw your Kaz clone blow up. It did nothing, nada, to Baran. I have the knife. I have the brains to do-
No,
Sand said, interrupting.
You lack sufficient-
Why don't you use that metal brain of yours for once, Sand? I shouted. Of course I'm the best. I got away from you, didn't I? Sand did not reply. You know I'm right, I said. Could anyone else have escaped from you the way I did?
It is highly doubtful, Sand admitted.
So you see, I said, I'm the best. I'm your best bet. If you destroy my ship, Baran will likely succeed and you will have failed in your great task.
I cannot abide your methods, Sand said. They are sneaky, underhanded.
I laughed. That's rich, you calling me underhanded. You're the grand sneak. You hide in the shadows, going so far as to demand that no one even knows you exist. You're a hypocrite, Sand.
I have a grave task to perform. I must see it completed for the entirety of my existence.
So that makes it right, huh?
Only in my case, Sand replied. That is because all life rests upon me.
Okay, I can see there's no arguing with you. But just so you know, if you fire at us, I'm teleporting the knife directly to Baran.
No, you must not.
Why do I care? I asked. If I'm dead, the world is dead to me.
Logan, what you suggest is an outrage.
I know it, I said.
No,
Sand said.
I cannot let that persuade me. This is your last chance.
Give me a second to speak with Rax, I said, putting the comm screen on mute so neither of us could hear the other. As I'd been talking, I'd also been flying the guard ship. I'd hoped, if nothing else, to buy us time to get out of the underworld and those missile sites. Well, Rax, I asked, how do we get out of the underworld?
I thought we were going to discuss San's proposal,
the crystal said. He doesn't have a proposal. He's just given us kamikaze orders.
Then...
Rax, I said, I'm buying us time. I'm trying to get out of range of Sand's missiles and laser sights. 2 seconds passed before Rax said,
That is clever of you. Yes, you're headed in the right direction. We cannot transfer through all this rock, but we can use the access tube to the surface.
You mean the tube I climbed down with Baran?
Indeed,
Rax said.
Ah, Sand is trying to hail us.
I'd seen the blinking red light and had been ignoring it.
The various sites' targeting sequences have begun,
Rax informed me. That was what I'd been waiting to hear. I clicked the comm switch, turning off the mute. All right, Sand, I said. You win. We're coming back. Rax has convinced me that you're right and that I'm wrong. The Earth is worth more than one man, even if that man is me.
I am glad you could see reason, Sand said.
What are your coordinates? Sand gave them. What did you say? I asked the metalhead. Your signal is breaking up, Sand. I only heard one set of the coordinate numbers.
Sand gave me the coordinates again.
I think I have it, I said, but just to be sure...
Logan, Sand said, interrupting. I have begun to suspect that you are attempting further trickery. I do not think you intend to return here.
You're wrong, Sand. You're dead wrong. I'm also surprised at you. You've won. I'm going to do what you say, and yet you're going to berate me.
Logan, you are saying nothing and doing it at length, Sand said. You are almost out of my missile range. If you do not immediately slow down...
Okay, okay, I said as I kicked in the afterburners, making this baby move.
You are going faster instead of slower, Sand complained. I am about to fire on your vessel.
No, no, I said. I made a mistake. All your threats have upset me. I'm trying to slow down. Rax has gone crazy. He's taking over control of the ship. Give me another few seconds so I can calm him down.
Logan,
Rax said, breaking in.
Sand's missiles have launched.
Self-destruct them, Sand, I said.
Only if you land immediately, the metalhead said.
At least self-destruct one of them so I know you're serious, I said. Sand regarded me through the screen as we stared at each other for several seconds. Finally, not one, not two, but all five missiles heading for the guard ship detonated in mid-flight.
Just for the record, Sand said, I know you are lying to me. It has just occurred to me, however, that such deceit is what is most likely needed to slay Baran and his confederates. You have persuaded me with your cleverness, Logan.
Rax, I whispered out of the side of my mouth. Has he really destroyed all the missiles?
Yes,
Rax said. You're not going to try to kill me? I asked Sand.
Not until after you have completed your mission, Sand said. The last part cannot change for the reasons I have already articulated.
I shook my head and finally nodded. Okay, big guy, I guess that's the best I'm gonna get. I turned to Rax. How long until we can transfer out of here?
3 minutes,
Rax said. Great, I said, sagging against the piloting chair. I expected something bad to happen at any second, but amazingly it didn't, and we transferred to the surface. Chapter 40. In a relatively short time, we were cruising underwater off the Californian coast. We siphoned power from the local grid, bringing all the batteries to full charge. I had a powwow with Rax, and we decided to bring Jenna into the picture. Once she joined us, I went over everything that had happened to me on the moon base, with Baran on Earth, and the strange conversation I'd had with Sand among his 9-foot robots.
They have Argon?
Jenna asked. A badly mangled and fully prisoner Argon, I said. I had the impression Sand had tormented Argon, if nothing else. Sand kept talking about how Argon had withheld certain information.
Given all that,
Jenna asked,
can we trust Sand?
That's a loaded question, I said. Can we trust him to try to kill us after the mission? Yes, I believe we can.
That's not what I meant. Can we believe him about the Polarian portal? The end of the galaxy if Baran opens the portal and that sort of thing.
Rax, I asked. That's your department. What do you think?
I believe Sand,
Rax said.
His story fits with certain irregularities I've noticed throughout the years. Like what?
Jenna asked.
Reciting them would make for a long and tedious list,
Rax said.
I do not think we have time for that. We must stick to the issue.
I agree, I said. And I believe Sand about the portal. His story holds together. It also supplies a reason why the Polarians disappeared and never showed their mugs again. It makes sense why the Galactic Guard keeps Earth quarantined. And it makes sense in another way.
How?
Jenna demanded. Before my gene therapy, I was always getting injured in the gym. And it was almost always for the same reason. Once I started growing, bigger arms, bigger chest, I lifted even harder so I'd grow bigger faster. I almost always went too hard, too fast, and injured myself. Only after some time off and coming back did I take it easier.
And that relates to Polarians?
Jenna asked.
I don't see it.
They were super geniuses, right? They figured they could do anything, try anything without harm. What does that likely mean? Well, to me, it means they lifted too heavy too fast. They pushed and wouldn't stop pushing until they came up against something too tough for them. Only in this case, they couldn't back off and rest. They were trapped in another dimension with things that changed them. They went too far and had no way home. Well, the half-mad Polarian made it back and tried to save the rest of us from the Polarian's folly and arrogance.
I don't know, Logan,
Jenna said.
That's pretty thin reasoning.
I shrugged. I was getting tired of her attitude.
If all this is the case, sans truthfulness in particular,
Rax said,
what do we do next? How do you propose we stop Baran?
Let's not sugarcoat this, I told them. We're not just stopping Baran. We're gonna kill him, his Tosks, and his Confederates, and we're gonna bury all the secrets they found after we're finished.
I understand the mission statement,
Rax said.
How will we achieve this against superior forces?
We're weaker, you're right. That means we need a force multiplier. I suggest we try to hit Baran from ambush. Rax and Jenna waited. I slapped a console as it came to me. I have it, I said. I know where to go. I know where Baran has to go.
Antarctica?
Rax asked. Right, I said, and it would be better if we could get there before he does and do it without anyone else noticing.
If we fly there, we risk detection from Earth authorities,
Jenna said. Not if we're spaceborne, I said.
Baran will surely spot the guard ship if we try an orbital path,
Rax said. Okay, I said. I guess that just leaves the underwater route.
And that will take some time to reach Antarctica from here,
Jenna said. Rax, I said, we're gonna have to make another cross-world transfer.
That might show up on Baran's sensors,
the crystal said. We're talking about several days if we cruise underwater all the way there, I said. I think that's too long.
Didn't San say that Baran was gathering reinforcements?
Rax asked.
You told me San said his Confederates were near Saturn. To reach Earth from Saturn?
They teleport, remember? I said. They use a linked system.
Yes, yes, I remember,
Rax said.
You are right, then. We must use a phase transfer. That will drain the batteries, and I think it will be harder to recharge near Antarctica.
Time is critical, I said. San must have said it 10 times while I was there. The sooner we reach the South Pole continent, the sooner we can set up our ambush site.
Antarctica is a large place,
Jenna said.
Just where on the continent are we going to go?
Good question, I said. I guess we're gonna have to find the Polarian portal. The other two remained silent. Like me, they surely realized that was going to be a difficult task. If it had truly been built over 6,000 years ago, the portal had remained hidden for a very long time. How long until we're ready to transfer? I asked Rax.
Any time,
the crystal said. I clapped my hands together. Does anyone have anything else to add? No one did. Okay, I said. Then let's check the ship, make sure everything is ready, and we'll transfer to the ice continent. Chapter 41. Time might have been of the essence, but after 2 days of fruitless searching, we were still no closer to finding any evidence of an ancient Polarian portal. Mainly, we cruised off the coast of Antarctica, searching for anomalies of any kind. During the times of greatest darkness, we emerged from the water and flew inland, continuing to search. Our luck proved just as dismal then. On the third day, we cruised toward the tip of South America, heading toward the nearest coastal city. Once within range, we began draining energy off the power grid until the batteries were once more fully charged. We immediately headed back for the ice-covered continent.
I suspect it is taking the Antadon longer to construct a chronowarp than Sand had anticipated,
Rax said. I don't get it, I said from the piloting chair. If Baran is such a genius, why has he been spending all his time trying to find the old chronowarp? I mean, why not fashion a chronowarp to begin with? If he'd done that, he'd be much farther along with his plans than he is now.
Have you ever made a misjudgment?
Rax asked. Plenty of times, I said.
When you made your misjudgment, have you immediately stopped heading the wrong way and started doing the smart thing?
Not hardly, I replied.
Often, geniuses are no different in that regard.
Rax seemed to ponder in silence.
There is another possibility. Fashioning a chronowarp could be dangerous. Perhaps only now has Baran realized that he'll never find the old one.
Sure, I said. That makes sense. Do you think he's found the portal on our side of the rift?
I believe so.
Well, Baran is doing a bang-up job hiding it from us.
We must risk traveling farther inland,
Rax said.
I must tighten the parameters of my sensor search. If Baran is cloaking the site...
Don't look for tech answers from me, I said, figuring that his silence meant that he didn't know what to do next.
I won't,
Rax said. Fortunately for us, during this time of year, Antarctic in daylight was of incredibly short duration. Rax finished his recalibrating and we rose from the sea, flying higher than we had for quite some time and flying inland. Then it got boring. We flew for hours upon hours as Rax searched for something, anything, to indicate an ancient Polarian portal. Sand should have told us where exactly this portal was supposed to be, I said. Jenna was in the chamber. She sat at a station helping Rax search the ice passing below us. I sipped a bottled water as I sat in my pilot's chair. Outside the port window, stars glittered overhead. It was cold outside, 40 degrees below zero. I'd grown up in California and had had little experience with such frigid weather. Fortunately, the guard ship stayed nice and cozy inside. I got up, went to the port window, and looked down at the bleak snowscape. It was beautiful after a fashion, but it was a white desert. It was hard to imagine that Antarctica had once been just like the other continents with high mountains, rolling green hills, and blue lakes. I noticed a bright wink in the distance, almost as if a particle of sunlight shined intensely in one location for one brief second. The centralized brightness caused my head to sway back in surprise. The intense but localized brightness occurred again, once more for a slightly longer duration, and stopped. I waited for the phenomenon to appear again. It did not. I finally shook myself and turned to the others. Did either of you two just see that? I asked.
See what?
Asked Rax. I told him.
This is interesting,
Rax said.
Jenna was monitoring a sensor board while I used the ship's sensors. We both focused on local fauna. The event must have occurred farther afield, considerably farther, I should think. Where exactly did this happen?
I gave him the best directions and estimate I could.
Given the brightness and that our boards picked up nothing concerning it,
Rax said,
I believe the phenomenon occurred. Oh, this is interesting. According to my calculations, this must have happened very near the South Pole.
Do you have any idea what that wink was? I asked.
There are several possibilities, none of them more agreeable than the others,
Rax said.
I suggest we head in that direction and scan at a wider range. It is possible the phenomenon will occur again and I will get a bead on it. If we do that,
Jenna said,
we'll break out of our search pattern grid. We've been strict about that so far. If we're going to veer, we are searching for anomalies,
Rax countered abruptly.
Logan has clearly seen one. Thus, logic dictates we head there immediately.
Jenna considered that and finally nodded. I climbed back into the piloting chair and turned the guard ship. We headed deeper inland, flying toward the South Pole while trying to figure out what had caused the bright wink effect. We flew for quite some time without anything interesting showing on the sensors. The phenomenon did not reappear. I finally increased speed, did it again, and yet a third time.
We're straining the sensors and we've covered a lot of territory,
Jenna said.
Have either of you heard of ice blink? Maybe that's what Logan saw. Maybe it was a mirage of some sort.
It was real, I said. We kept flying. My gut had been tightening. What had I seen? Maybe this was a wild goose chase. I kept wondering if I should tell them Jenna was right. Stubbornly, I shook my head.
I don't know,
Jenna said. I sighed, opened my mouth to speak.
Check your screen, Jenna,
Rax said.
We may have just found something.
Chapter 42.
Rax had picked up a trace of a strange radiation. What made it weird was that the radiation signature did not last long. That didn't seem to make sense. Could it have come from a mobile machine? I asked.
I do not think so, Rax said. The radiation trace seemed to be in snow. Ice, to be more specific. I did not scan the presence of any nearby metals. All sensor traces have vanished,
Jenna said, studying her board.
Fortunately, I have the location,
Rax said.
It is another 237 kilometers away in our present direction of travel. The locale is less than 300 kilometers from the South Pole.
You know, I said a few minutes later, I'm thinking we should come in low. If Baran or his people caused the effect, it means they're already there. We need to catch them by surprise, remember?
There is a negative to the suggestion, Rax said. If we fly lower, we cannot scan as much territory.
Despite that, I took us ground-skimming low so the dark snowscape flashed underneath the ship. I rechecked the laser banks. They were fully charged. I rechecked my targeting sensors. They were good. I was ready for teleporting floaters, Baran, and Tosk tripod cannons if they had any. In time, Rax said,
We're coming up on the location.
I slowed down, checking my targeting sensors. I couldn't see anything but the bleak ice scape. It was 50 below out there with buffeting winds. Swirls of snow flew every which way. The craft shook from time to time. What are you seeing? I asked Jenna.
It's barren, she said. There aren't even any polar bears out there.
I laughed. This is Antarctica. Polar bears only live in the Arctic. Just to let you know, I added, there aren't any penguins in the Arctic. They're just in Antarctica, and then almost always along the coast. Jenna hunched over her screen.
Logan?
At that instant, a green beam flashed up from the ground. It speared over 3 kilometers, striking the ship. Hang on, I shouted, veering sharply. The green beam tried to follow us, but failed to move as sharply. The beam flashed past us. One of my instrument panels blinked on and off. According to it, the beam had almost punched through the underbelly armor while it had been targeted on us. Just what kind of beam did the enemy use? It must have been stronger than anything I'd faced in the past. Was that a handheld beam carbine? I asked.
No,
Rax said.
It came from a turret cannon, from a vehicle you have named a floater.
A second beam flashed from a different location. It struck the armored underbelly. I was ready for it this time. I veered again, going up as I did so.
I have a lock on target,
Rax said. I saw it on my readout. A floater, just like Rax said, was a little less than 3 kilometers from the guard ship. I didn't bother firing my lasers because that would leave me as a target for the green beams. I wanted point-blank range so I could take out the floater with 1 or 2 quick shots. For the next few minutes, I juked this way and that. I went up and down, sideways, expelled chaff, deployed 2 decoy emitters, and took 3 hits. One green beam stayed on target too long.
Rupture,
Rax announced. I lost a little power and we dipped. I smelled electrical burning and saw smoke trickle through what should have been a sealed hatch. Son of a gun, I shouted. Now the floaters were at point-blank range. There were 2 of them with 2 turrets each. I didn't spot any extra Tosks on the ground. On the ice, I mean. I took the guard ship as low as I dared. It was hardly 5 meters off the deck of Antarctica. I had to veer over icy hills. I pulled the triggers. Red lasers stabbed from my twin cannons. There was one on each wing. The lasers drilled a floater, burning into armor, burning. The floater disappeared. It must have teleported out of danger. That was a clever move. Had a Tosk pilot done that of his own volition?
Behind us,
Rax said. I went left, roared up, juked right, and did a complex maneuver that pulled hard G's against us. I felt my concentration slipping as we kept turning at speed. A second floater drilled the guard ship from a different location. I cursed profusely, took us down hard, broke off my turn, and zeroed in on the second beaming floater. The green beams drilled us directly. I poured laser fire into it. It was a game of head-on chicken. Then I saw the bulkhead before me melt as if made out of candle wax. It was more than a little disturbing. Rax, I shouted, but I did not veer away. 2 enemy turrets poured the green beams at us. One speared through, slashing past me as I sat in the piloting chair. I could feel the heat, and I wondered if radiation was soaking into me from the beam. If the beam lasted too long, the enemy floater exploded. They must have tried to teleport at the very last second because some parts of the craft seemed to simply disappear. The rest twisted as a fireball shot up into the darkness. We flashed through that mass. I could feel the heat through the hull rupture. Then we were past the burning floater, or what remained of it. In seconds, it became unbelievably frigid in our chamber as icy cold blew in through the rupture. Jenna, I shouted in order to be heard over the howling noise. We need parkas on the double.
I'm on it,
she said, unbuckling. As I turned the guard ship, beginning a second game of maneuvers with the remaining floater, Jenna staggered out of the chamber. Foul-smelling smoke poured in when the hatch opened. The icy breeze coming in through the hull breach did just enough to keep the smoke from choking me so that I could still function. I don't know what happened in the next few minutes. I flew by instinct. I did crazy stunts, bypassing most of the green beam shots. Then a parka landed on my lap. Jenna was already wearing one as she buckled back in at her station. She had cuts on her face and blood running from her nose. She must have taken more than one fall because of my piloting antics.
"Logan," Rax said, "we are taking more direct hits. We cannot win this exchange."
"Don't you think I know that?" I shouted.
"What are you doing then?"
"Killing the enemy," I said. For a moment, Rax said nothing. The guard ship roared over a huge hole in the ice. Rax and I must have seen it at the same time.
"What was that?" Rax asked.
Another green beam punched through the ship, taking my left laser cannon. That also disrupted the aerodynamics of the vessel. We began to wobble as everything shook around me, including my piloting chair. How can I explain my next move? I guess I saw red. I guess I figured I was going to die anyway. I know I've spoken before about the Japanese during World War II. They did one thing I could dearly appreciate. When a Japanese pilot knew his plane had taken too much damage, he used the airplane itself like a guided missile. I aimed the guard ship at the floater, pouring laser fire from my last cannon. They beamed us, I beamed them.
"Turn, turn," Rax said. "You are going to ram them."
Normality returned to me in the last moment. "Rax," I shouted, "you have to teleport us outside. Bring the knife, too."
"Logan."
"There's no more time, Rax." I was dead on right as the guard ship crashed against the Antaran floater. Chapter 43. I materialized lying face down on a thin layer of snow over ice. I started shivering right away. Explosions in the distance caused me to look around. A fire burned maybe 5 clicks away. No doubt I saw the result of the guard ship crashing against the floater. I stood up, wiped off snow, and shrugged on the parka that had been under me. Even after I zipped it up and threw the fur-lined hood over my head, I continued to shiver uncontrollably. I remembered that it was 50 below out here, worse if one added the wind chill factor. The icy wind howled like a banshee, forcing me to lean against it just to stand upright. I sensed one other item in the starry darkness. It was the knife, the otherworldly weapon. I stared at it for a second and reluctantly picked it up. With a sense of fatalism and foreboding, I hiked up the parka and buckled the knife belt around my waist. I was still shivering afterward, but I knew it wouldn't last that long. All I had to do was kill Lord Baran, and my part in this little game would be over. I saw a light shining nearby and a person turning in circles. "Jenna!" I shouted. The light didn't shine my way. I doubt she could hear me over the banshee howl. Before I left my location, I looked around, spotted Rax, and picked him up. It was too loud for me to hear him, so I put an implant in my ear so we could communicate.
"I thought you were going to leave me," Rax said.
"Not a chance," I said. I didn't have a flashlight, and Jenna's was no longer pointed at me. I could see a flicker of light over there, so I stumbled across the icy wasteland, knowing I had to get to her soon. I wasn't sure how long either of us could last in this freezing weather. A few moments later, I grabbed her parka. "Jenna!" I shouted. She whirled around, shining the light in my face. Then she lurched to me, putting her arms around my torso and hugging fiercely. I patted her on the back. It was awkward. That wasn't because of Jenna, but because our parkas and the wind had made us like two clumsy fat people. She released me and punched me in the stomach. "Hey," I said, caught off guard. She leaned near me and shouted,
"What kind of idiot are you? How are we going to survive this?"
"At least we're still alive," I shouted back. "The floaters were winning. They had the better beam cannons, and there were two of them and only one of us."
"We're stranded at the South Pole," she shouted. "How much more screwed can we be?"
"I know what you mean. Let's check out the hole in the ice and find out." She stared at me in the Antarctic cold and finally wrapped my left arm with the two of hers. We stumbled like that in search of the giant hole Rax and I had seen earlier.
"Logan, look out,"
Rax warned several minutes later. I stopped and I yanked Jenna back. The wind and icy particles had been blowing in my face. I needed goggles for this weather. I swayed in the darkness and finally knelt, dragging Jenna down beside me. She put her face against me so the fur of our hoods touched.
What are you doing?
Feel out with your hand, I shouted. She reached out, leaned more, and almost fell into the edge of the giant hole. Fortunately, I yanked her back in time. She put her face against mine again.
That's the hole,
she shouted. Yup, I shouted back.
So now what do we do?
I pulled off a glove, thought about what I was going to do, and lay down on the ice. I stretched out my hand. Just like I suspected, I felt warmth billowing up from the hole. I sat back as I put on my glove. Maybe I could climb down, but I didn't think Jenna could. We could jump, but that would probably end in our splattering deaths. I pulled her close and shouted, "We're going to circle the hole. Maybe whoever made this thing has a machine to take us down." In the starlit darkness, she searched my eyes.
I have to tell you, Logan, I'm not gonna last long in this weather. I'm freezing.
We'll make it, I shouted. Jenna had started to seriously shiver. I knew I could last a while out here due to my gene therapy, but I had a responsibility to Jenna for putting her in this mess. Get on the other side of me, I said. I don't want you collapsing and tumbling into the hole on accident. She did what I said, and we set off. I began by crawling, but realized that would freeze us quicker. Besides, it would take too long to circle the hole this way. I stood, dragged Jenna upright, let her lean against me, and started circling the crazy hole. Earlier, had I seen Baran or some other alien burn the giant hole in the ice in a matter of seconds? Or had I seen some sort of giant teleportation? The truth was that I didn't know what I'd seen. It had led us here, though, so either of those possibilities could be true. What do you want to hear? The wind howled. Icy particles pelted us, and the cold leached our strength. I had become ravenously hungry. This was the South Pole. I was at the bottom of the world. Part of me wished I could have had an American flag to plant in the ice. On second thought, I'd plant the old "Don't Tread on Me" snake flag. I know a certain section of society doesn't like that flag anymore, but I didn't know of a better flag to express how I felt as an old-style Davy Crockett American and as a pissed-off Earthling regarding these extraterrestrial invaders. I was going to beat them. I just had to figure out how to stay alive long enough. Jenna clutched my arm more tightly.
Did you hear that?
She shouted. No, what is it?
Listen,
she said. I did, but I couldn't hear anything besides the howling wind.
Logan,
Rax warned.
There are creatures approaching.
Why didn't you tell me about them sooner? I asked Rax.
Something...
But Rax didn't finish his thought. At that moment, five big tusks appeared out of the icy particles, as if coming from behind a curtain. They wore their harnesses, but little else. Their wolf-like ears were pinned back against their scalps, and each of them aimed a beam carbine at me.
Hands up,
the leader said. I put my gloved hands in the air.
Come,
he said, motioning with his carbine. Stay behind me, I told Jenna. Then I faced the tusks and started to crunch across the snow in the direction he'd shown.
Chapter 44.
It didn't come as a surprise when the tusks herded us aboard a floater. Getting out of the blistering cold and coming into this warmth was its own reward. The leader patted me down, found the knife easily enough, and went to take it. I didn't see what I could do about it. The other tusks watched, two of them keeping their beam carbines aimed at me. There didn't appear to be any other people aboard the floater, just the five tusks, Jenna and me. Was Baran finally running low of his slave creatures? I had a feeling that the answer was yes. The Tusk chieftain reached for the knife, as I've said, and he hesitated. A Tusk hand, incidentally, was narrower than a regular human hand. It had longer fingers and dog-like claws instead of fingernails. The chieftain's hand trembled, fingers curled up against the narrow palm and pulled back. The Tusk peered at me and cocked his head. "What's wrong?" I asked. He uncurled his index finger and pointed at the knife hanging from my waist.
"It is different," he said.
"It's just a knife," I said. He shook his head slowly and licked his chops nervously.
"I do not like it,"
he informed me. "Want me to draw it so you can inspect it better?" He studied me. I don't think the giant canine trusted me, as this fellow obviously had good senses. He seemed to come to a conclusion and reached for the knife again. Once more, he balked, hesitating. This time, he took a step back, another, and finally raised his beam carbine at me.
Unlatch, he said. Put on deck.
I shrugged and began to unbuckle the belt. Once ready, I lifted the belt and metallic sheath and stepped toward him as if to give him the otherworldly weapon. He stumbled away from me while shaking his head.
No, no, keep away.
I moved the sheathed knife upside down, and it did what I wanted it to do. The knife slid from the metallic scabbard and clunked to the floor. The knife just lay there, the otherworldly blade shimmering in an odd way. I swear I could hear a whiny sound, a screeching even. It set my teeth on edge. It did worse to the Tosks. They whimpered, dropped their carbines, and clamped their furry hands over their ears. Some of them began to howl like hounds. Those lifted their snouts in the air and howled louder, beginning to quiver. I glanced at Jenna. She stared at the knife in dread, having gone paler than I'd ever seen a person. She trembled and hugged herself, beginning to moan. I frowned. The knife clearly affected them much worse than it did me. I did not care for the implications. Was I no longer truly human? I couldn't accept that. In any case, I picked up the knife and debated the correct course. I was thinking about raising the knife and making them all surrender. I would be their god king, as it were. All that changed as I gripped the weapon. This was the first time I'd done so while the blade was free from the scabbard. Instead of lifting the knife on high like a totem, I held it close to me, ready to strike. That wasn't all. An oily feeling swept over me. I shivered at that. It was a sick sensation. I detested it. The knife seemed heavy in my hand. I swear it quivered on its own accord, and the pitch, the whine from earlier, rose. It almost felt as if the knife whispered creepy, devilish words to me. I felt bloodlust wash over me. One moment I considered how to capture the Tosks, the next I advanced upon the chieftain. I was hardly even aware of doing it. The whine in my ears, and my soul maybe, intensified. Before I knew what I was doing, I'd stabbed the chieftain in the heart. The result stunned me. The blade went into his chest with considerable ease. Smoke billowed from it. The Tosk howled like a demented madman, and he began to shrivel. It was an awful phenomenon. It seemed as if he were collapsing in upon himself the longer the blade was in him. I yanked. The knife didn't come out as easily as it had entered. It almost seemed as if the blade was hooked to his flesh. The blade fought me as if it didn't want to leave the Tosk until it had consumed him.
No!
I shouted, pulling hard, stumbling as the knife came out suddenly. What remained of the Tosk, like a withered mummy creature, simply collapsed in a boneless heap. The horror of the effect should have stopped me. Instead, an obscene strength flooded into me. I felt soiled and invigorated at the same time. I realized that the life force of the Tosk was powering me. I laughed. I hardly recognized the sound as my own. Feeling powerful, I turned on the next Tosk. The creature seemed to know what was going to happen to him. He tried to pick up his dropped carbine. Maybe he was too afraid. Maybe something else was at work. All I know was that I butchered him, gaining power and feeling hideous at the same instant. I slaughtered all five of the Tosks in the floater as though they were sheep. It was not a fight. The more I slew, the more giant-like I felt. Finally, as the last Tosk collapsed onto the deck, I turned toward Jenna. She seemed like a small, pale thing that deserved to die. She opened her mouth and shouted. It sounded like she spoke a man's name. As I stepped toward her with the knife, why didn't I see any blood on the blade? Surely the knife didn't drink it. In any case, as I stepped toward Jenna to kill the poor fool, I realized she was shouting my name. Why would the sacrifice I was about to butcher do that? Why? I halted, feeling as if my chest would burst because my heart pounded so hard. I could not kill Jenna. She was a friend. It felt then as if the knife crooned promises of what we could do on this weak earth. I could rule as a god if I desired. This was my hour. This was the... No! I shouted, horrified at what I was thinking. With all my might, with every ounce of desire to be my own man and not some thing's slave, I pried my fingers from the handle. For just a second, it seemed as if the handle was glued to my palm and refused to leave. That had to be a hallucination. That was unnatural. With a tearing cloth sound, the knife dropped from my open palm and clunked onto the floor as if it weighed 300 pounds. I staggered back from it, blinking in shock. Some of my sanity returned. It didn't help that at this point the Tosk corpses burst into flames. What was worse, Jenna's eyes rolled up inside her head and she collapsed onto the floor in a death-like heap. Chapter 45. The next few minutes I acted on autopilot. I'd been in the floaters enough that I'd seen the Tusks and Baran operate them. I knew the basic things. I opened the hatch so the Antarctic wind howled inside the vessel. It blew at the fires of the burning Tusks, which served to harden my resolve. Grabbing two beam carbines, I shoved the burning Tusk masses out of the hatch to tumble down the ramp. It was hot, sweaty labor. It allowed me to see the work of my hand when it had joined with a dreadful knife. I ended up singeing my hands and parka so they stank, but finally I closed the hatch. I almost sank down in exhaustion. Instead, I went to Jenna. She was breathing shallowly and was still pale and twitchy. She was unconscious, but she was making little mewling sounds. I wasn't sure what to do. "Rex?" I asked. I heard garbled words from the crystal, gibberish. Okay, it seemed that Rex was out for a while. Whatever that blade did when exposed to the air affected him as well as the rest of us. "Jenna," I whispered. She mewled and shivered more, but she didn't come out of it. I shook her. That did nothing. I shook harder. She whimpered and cringed, but still did not come to. I stood up, backing away from her. This was worse than I'd expected. Well, the truth was that I hadn't really expected much when drawing the blade. I guess I hadn't really considered San's words. I quickly slid the sheath to where the knife lay on the floor and slid it over the blade, using a booted toe to guide the knife home. This was a devil knife, a demon blade. I don't mean it had come from hell or been forged by demons, not in a biblical sense, but by creatures that we humans would have probably thought of as demons. They were extraterrestrials. I never wanted to draw it again. In fact, for a second, I debated taking the floater to Utah and trying to get back into San's underworld. I'd return the devilish blade to him. I sighed, nixing the idea. I had the knife. I'd lost my guard ship, and I was near the terrible Polarian portal. If I'd needed any spur or proof for believing San's allegations about the danger of the former Polarians coming through, this knife was it. "Logan, old buddy," I told myself, "it's time to earn your keep." I buckled on the damned belt, keeping the knife with me. Sand had warned me that prolonged exposure would destroy people. I believed him. First, I checked the floater, including looking into both turret compartments and out through their windows. The ice particle storm still raged. The stars still shimmered above it. I felt like a lost soul in a lost land. I guess I might have been both. The floater was empty except for Jenna, Rax, and me. Finally, I went to the piloting station and began to do what I'd seen the Tusk pilots do plenty of times. The controls proved pathetically easy to use. I manipulated them, causing the floater to vibrate and lift off the snowy surface. "Can you do this?" I asked myself quietly. "I guess we're gonna find out, son." I studied the piloting screen and took the floater over the giant hole. I probably should have tested it a different way, but I was in a hurry. The thing dropped like a rock, heading for the bottom who knew how far away. The rock-like fall lifted me off the floor in a speeding elevator fashion. Only my reflexes saved me as I grabbed a stanchion to keep from floating too far from the controls.
"Logan," Rax said in a sluggish voice, "we're in danger."
I could see that. By arm strength alone, I forced my feet onto the floor and manipulated the controls. Power roared into the hover element. A lurch against my feet told me I'd stopped the rock-like descent. Jenna thudded onto the floor from where she'd been floating. I hoped she hadn't broken anything. The knock stopped her moaning, and I thought I heard her smack her lips together. Maybe she was waking up.
"That is better," Rax informed me.
I studied the piloting screen, made a smoother controlled drop, and the piloting screen wavered. Abruptly, Baran's long face appeared on the screen, smirking at me.
"Logan, Logan, Logan," the Antaran said. "This is a surprise."
"Ain't it just," I said. "How's it hanging?" Baran exposed his teeth. That meant he was in high good humor.
"I have no idea how you dispatched my Tusks, but I shall not underestimate you again."
"I'm here to help you, Lord."
"Of course you are," he said. "And so is this."
"What?" I asked. The floater shuddered again.
"Logan," Rax said, "we're under attack. A beam is about to smash through the bottom of the floater."
Chapter 46.
Jenna, still unconscious, slid across the floor as I maneuvered the floater. We smashed against an icy side of the shaft, causing the craft to shake. I juked the other way, smashing against the ice again on the other side. Rax gave rapid-fire instructions, telling me when the green beam was striking our bottom and when it wasn't.
You should go up,
Rax said at one point. I gritted my teeth in determination, applying everything I'd learned while piloting the guard ship. There was no way I was heading up. The 2-minute warning had gone off, as it were. The game was almost over. Either I stopped Baran now or he would likely open the portal. There was no second try. He was winning and the clock was ticking against humanity. How much farther? I shouted.
The distance is unknown,
Rax said. Give me an estimate.
More,
Rax said. The beam struck again as sweat dripped from my face. I felt ill. I wondered if that was the knife's doing. I'm not sure why it came to me then, but I had the feeling that if I actually held the knife, then whatever it radiated at the others wouldn't hurt me. I had a moment's belief that the knife was intelligent in some alien fashion. I wondered if it was radiating willpower against me even now in order to beat down my resolve to not hold it. That had to be crazy thinking. I must have been more exhausted than I'd realized to even consider such a thing. Baran, I shouted at the screen. Can you hear me?
Not for much longer, Logan, the Antaran said. You are doing an artful job dodging the beam, but soon that will no longer matter. I would like to tell you that you were a worthy adversary, but I would be lying.
Baran, Lord Baran, you have to listen to me, I said.
You have no hold over me that I must do anything you say.
Okay, I said, moving the floater sideways, causing another crashing sound from outside, shaking the craft so I almost lost my footing. You don't have to, you're right. But I found something about the Polarians that might interest you.
Yes,
he asked. They've mutated, and they've gone insane on the other side of the dimensional rift, turning into devilish monsters that will kill everything over here.
You could not possibly have discovered such a thing.
I spoke to Sand.
That makes no sense, Baran said. Are you drugged or simply delusional?
Sand is the name of a construct like a robot. He knows about the conditions on the other side of the reality rift.
Logan,
Rax warned,
the beam is burning through.
I swore under my breath as I concentrated on the controls. This time, the outer blow to the floater knocked me off my feet. I sprang back up, manipulated the controls, and dodged another beaming. The mutated things over there could easily defeat all the former Polarians united, I said. You're no match for them, Baran. You're going to get us all killed by opening a portal to a grimly alien dimension.
I seriously doubt that,
he said. Lord Baran, I said, knowing I had to go for broke, I know what I'm talking about. How do you think I slew your Tosks? They'd captured me, but the alien weapon I possessed destroyed the Tosks' ability to resist. Don't you think you should at least inspect the alien weapon before you throw away your life opening the portal? Baran stared at me from the screen. As he did, I put all the sincerity I could muster onto my face.
No,
he said. Desperation caused me to draw the knife and wave it at him on the screen. Look at this, you fool! Does this seem normal? The Antaran studied the blade.
The beam cannon has ceased firing at the floater,
Rax informed me.
That does indeed look like a Polarian artifact,
Baran said slowly.
I would like to inspect it. Where did you find it, Logan?
I stole it from Sand.
Who is this Sand again?
That's what I'm trying to tell you. Sand is another Polarian artifact. His creator fashioned the underworld. Sand told me about the portal. The machine, the Great Machine, was designed to block the portal. Sand and the Great Machine blocked the way from the alien dimension to Earth in order to avert galactic disaster.
You will land soon, Logan. I have a Tosk escort waiting. They will bring you to me. If what you say is true, I will waive your death sentence and allow you and your woman to live.
I nodded because I didn't trust myself to speak. I didn't trust myself to make any plans lest I give them away in some fashion. Besides, for all I knew, this was a trick. Then I couldn't help myself and said, I have a question. Baran looked down his narrow nose at me.
Ask it,
he said. How did you make this huge shaft?
A space beam formed it less than an hour ago,
Baran said. The wink, I told Rax.
I had already surmised as much,
the crystal told me.
We are fast approaching the bottom, Logan. I suggest you slow down for landing.
Do you sense Tosks? I asked.
There are several heavy beam cannons set up aimed at the floater,
Rax said.
Any misstep will surely result in our destruction.
Bring the Rax system crystal with you, Baran said over the screen.
Yes, Lord, I said. At that point, Baran cut the comm connection. The regular outer cameras flickered on. I've thought to see bluish ice around us, but we must have passed the ice some time ago. I saw rock. The space beam